G'day everyone, this is going to be a slightly different video because of the timing. So this is not a Friday morning video anymore. And in case you didn't know, this is normally something I do on a Friday morning. This is a Thursday afternoon video. Now, to be more specific, it is a Thursday 6 p.m. video, which means that instead of drinking coffee, I can drink beer, which is great. So in order to do something quite different to the usual, I'm going to have beer. Now, incidentally, whilst I'm pouring this lovely Yakima Monster American Pale Ale beer, some people get kind of upset on the internet, as we've established people tend to do, about having a can for beer instead of a bottle. Now, it's an interesting thing, and this is just totally absolutely nothing to do with the normal technology stuff, but, cheers. Seems to be a bit of a cultural thing in different places, the way they package both beer and wine. Australia is starting to move a lot towards cans. And the thing about cans, and I'm not an expert on cans and bottles here, and someone is going to get upset with me and tell me I'm wrong. But as is my understanding, cans don't leak any air, whereas obviously bottles do leak some air. They've got a cap. They're not sealed tight like a can is. Cans chill down very quickly if you put them in the freezer, if you just bought some nice warm ones and you want them to be nice cold ones. Also, cans I can pick up and open right here without a bottle opener, which is handy, because I seem to keep getting my bottle openers confiscated when I go through Australian security customs. Isn't this interesting? Or Australian security. I have these wallet ninjas, credit card size things, and they've got screwdrivers and like little hex keys and stuff, and a bottle opener. And the problem is like the inside of one part of these things is apparently sharp. TSA, no problems. All over Europe, no problems. Go through Sydney Airport every single time I lose them. So I keep a spare stash in the drawer. But I digress. Wine in Australia as well. It is exceptional to buy a bottle of wine that has a cork, either the classic like tree cork or even a plastic cork. Everything is twist tops now. Because, hey, twist tops is easy. Turns out they actually seal better as well. And here we are. So there's my little cultural thing for the week. That is different in Australia to some parts of the world. Get over it. You're going to pour it into a bottle anyway. Or where are we? You're going to pour it into a glass anyway, if you're drinking your beer right. So moving on. What have I been doing this week? Actually, for those of you not watching but listening instead, I may look like I'm a little bit not sunburned, been out in the sun. So I just had a couple of hours out in the sun. We went on a little boat ride. I sat near an island and actually pumped out some writing, which was kind of cool. And I know that it sounds exotic, and don't get me wrong, it is very nice. but I have really been struggling to get balance into my normal routine. And what I mean by that is that when I had a day job, in the early days of having a day job, I would go to work and I'd do my job and I'd come home and then I wouldn't do my job. I'd be doing whatever I want to do. And then as I started getting involved in the blogging and the internets and all this sort of thing, I guess almost a decade ago now, the lines kind of blurred because I went to the job and I did my thing and then I came home and I was blogging or creating Pluralsight courses or things like that. And now having independence, there is just no more sense anymore of when the day starts, when the day finishes. And in all seriousness, it's like as much as I love many of the things that come with that, it is very difficult to know when to switch off and when to have a break. And I just got to the point today where I said to both my wife and my kids, it's like, yeah, like screw all these meetings and everything else that all of us seem to end up having. Let's just actually have some time out. And I appreciate I did just say I was working on my laptop on the boat, but I did have some downtime as well. Then the kids ran around on the beach and I sat there in the sun and did some emails. So I do want to talk about that another time, actually, because it is, and I'm trying to think of about a way to put it without people going, I don't feel very sympathetic because you get to live near the sunshine. So I'm going to try and do something more cohesive on that another time. On to the more sort of work-related things. I was down in Sydney earlier this week. I had a very, very last-minute talk come up for a very interesting financial institution. I didn't actually see anything written publicly about this, so I won't name who they were because it was an internal private one. But I had a flying trip on Sunday. No, Sunday. That would be weird. Monday. So I went out to Sydney, spent the day there, did a bunch of cyber talky things, came home again. I have alluded a couple of times to another upcoming trip internationally. I am going off to Canada at the end of next week, and I'm going to be in Montreal for about 5 days. After which I thought, well, if I'm going to be in Montreal and it's like this time of year and it's probably snowy, I should go to snow. So I just turned into a family holiday and we're going to go to Whistler after that as well. So I'm not sure whether I'm going to have an opportunity to catch up with people in either of those places, but I will be sharing many photos and talking about what I do while I'm there as well. So that is going to be a very, very different environment to here. We had 35 Celsius here yesterday. It is somewhat less than that in Montreal and Whistler at the moment. And it was kind of funny today because I was like getting my snowboards out in the like stinking hot weather to take them down to the snowboard shop and get waxed. Another cultural interesting thing. Peak time for snowboard shops in Australia, outside of those that are in the mountains, is actually this time of year, like in the height of our approaching our summer. Because of the Northern Hemisphere season. So there you go. So that's coming up. Now, on to more specific security things. Something that was fun today, amusing today, and I think has a bit of an interesting narrative to it, is example.com. Now, example.com is a special domain used specifically for examples. You can go to example.com and you see, what do you see? Actually, I've got it here on the screen. Example domain. This domain is established to be used for illustrative examples in documents. You may use this domain in examples without prior condition or asking for permission. I always find it a little bit funny to need to ask for permission to reference a domain, but, you know, here we are. So, nothing interesting about that until you looked at the fact that their certificate expired before they managed to get a new one. Now, it's example.com, you know, like I don't know how much people really care. I guess I can imagine cases where maybe someone was trying to create like a TLS connection for example.com to test a client TLS implementation or something like that, and then certificate validation failed. I don't know. But they're not exactly losing business transactions. But it was just interesting to see it because when I went and had a look at the certificate, it was actually a 3-year certificate, which was a massive, massive duration. And I tweeted earlier today, I said, you know, if only there was a way of like automating the renewal and getting it for free and doing it with like an open service. And I think it was just another one of these reminders that we have seen so many incidents of certificates not being renewed recently, sometimes very, very long running certificates as well. That it's just like a constant reminder that this is something important and repetitive, therefore we should automate it. They have now renewed it with a 2-year certificate. I was really, really hoping to see a Let's Encrypt certificate on there because free, open, all those other things. That wasn't actually the case, but it has been renewed all the same, so at least they're back up and running. Incidentally as well, Scott Helm has a very, very good piece on how certificate revocation is broken, about the fact that we just simply can't rely on clients understanding that a certificate has been revoked if one has needed to be pulled because of, say, private key compromise. And therefore, one of the best defenses we have against certificate revocation being broken is short expiry periods, not long ones. So, for example, the 3-month expiry period of a Let's Encrypt certificate. So that was example.com, which was an interesting example, as many people pointed out. Now, a few other things. This morning, I loaded another breach into Have I Been Pwned with 44 million records. That is quite good, too. The beer, not the Have I Been Pwned. 44 million records from a company called Data and Leads. You may have gotten a breach notification from Have I Been Pwned about Data and Leads and never have heard of them before because they are yet another data aggregation service which has left their data exposed. Now, Bob, with the last name that I can never pronounce, sorry, Bob, security researcher Bob, who has sent me many interesting bits of data in the past, identified this as it was an Elasticsearch. I swear I've only had like 3 mouthfuls of beer, but it's just been a very, very long week. It was an Elasticsearch instance. It was left publicly facing without a password, and now here we are. Now, there were several interesting things about this. And one, and I have a feeling I might have touched on this last week as well, is that I'm really increasingly frustrated by the fact that we have all of these data aggregators storing your data and my data and my wife's data and all of my mates' data and everyone else's without any sort of consent or any, I guess, semblance of human decency for how they should respect our personal information. And we continue to see this information flowing all over the place in repositories, in areas that we've just got absolutely no idea about and certainly no control about. And then, of course, they get breached. One of the really interesting things is as I was loading this data last night, I was running some queries on the Have I Been Pwned database to see what percentage of these accounts had already appeared in Have I Been Pwned. More than 99%, I think it was like 99.17% of these accounts were already in there. Now that is an extraordinarily high number. I would normally see somewhere from say 50 to 75% for like a normal garden variety data breach. When I saw 99 point something, I sort of went, okay, I need to look at this closer, because is this a breach that has already happened and been public and it's just been rebranded as something else? And I'm basically loading in a rebranded copy of something that's already in there. And the interesting thing is that the answer was no, it was not a rebranded instance of something that was already there. What I was actually seeing is that even though each account, almost each account, 99.17% or something of accounts were already in Have I Been Pwned, there was no constant theme in terms of which breach they appeared against. So for example, they didn't all come from LinkedIn. What I was seeing is a lot of other spam lists and a lot of other similar data aggregators appearing over and over and over again. River City Media, Trix Spambot, things like this. And what that said to me is that these lists had common origins. Now maybe one of them was breached somewhere or exposed, all was just traded throughout the marketplaces, and that then made, or rather contributed to the other, or could have been vice versa, or maybe multiple lists just had the same source, which is some other upstream thing I've never seen before. I don't know, and this is kind of what is really, really bugging me, because there's just no way to even trace all this stuff back. There's so much of it. So if you are in data and leads, you have almost certainly been in another data breach in Have I Been Pwned, and you'll probably find it was one of a very similar nature. I do still have a draft blog post about data aggregators that I'm just trying to like get the right narrative on to try and figure out the point I'm trying to make about them, other than the fact that it kind of feels it sucks. But this is just another one of these incidents. And there are more in the pipeline too. We will see more and more of these in terms of data that I'm still processing, in terms of data that Bob in particular finds or other security researchers of his ilk. I don't have a good answer for it, and before you say it, no, GDPR is not the answer for it, and I'm going to have another blog post where I give examples of where, unfortunately, even data regulators within the EU have said, well, it's outside Europe, there's really not much we can do about it. Yes, I know extraterritoriality. I will include the statements from these data, what's even the right word, from the regulators. I just lament the fact that there's really not much we can do about it. Moving on to something different. I can't say lighthearted, frustrating. York Council. Let's talk about York Council. Now, here is the chronology as best I understand it. A few days ago, so I am at my Thursday evening now. This was bang on 3 days ago. So we were back on Monday. Someone forwarded me a data breach disclosure notice from York Council. Now, if you are from another part of the world, not in the UK, York is in, if I say England, I'll get in trouble because I don't know if I meant to say England or Great Britain or UK. It's over there. Now, York Council had a bit of a data breach. There's a notice here from them. In fact, here's the first thing. They sent this data breach notice as a PDF attachment to an email. So, like, immediately you should be going, well, you know how all, like, the phishing guidance we get in the office and everything says never open attachments? I just got an email with an attachment. What should I do? So, like, don't do this. There's all these good blog post ideas. There's probably another one in here, which is, like, how to send legitimate communications and not look like you're mounting a phishing attack. Don't attach freaking PDFs. We have the technology to put the contents of the PDF in the body of the email. There's no need to attach this stuff. One Planet York app data breach. So One Planet appears to be, or One Planet York appears to be an app that they've created. First sentence here, we respect the privacy of your information. Turns out not so much, but we'll get back to that. Which is why, as a precautionary measure, we're writing to let you know about a data security incident that involves your personal information. Now, this is dated 16 November. It says, on 1 November 2018, 15 days earlier, a third party contacted the council and told us they had found a way to access personal data of these... Oh, geez, is this me or is this them? A third party contacted the council and told us they had found a way to access personal data of those people who use the One Planet York app. Funny wording. The data accessed included personal information such as your name, address, postcode, email and telephone together with your encrypted password. This is probably one of those cases where encrypted meant hashed, and they said encrypted because the masses understand it. I'm not going to hold a grudge against them for that. I understand why that's said. Of course, we have no idea how it was hashed. To our knowledge, the data access did not include any sensitive information. In addition, the One Planet York is isolated from our council systems and therefore unable to access other personal data. Probably very true. Now, here's where it gets interesting. I'm just going to get to the important bits here. The important bit here is we have notified the police, and here's the key words, notified the police of this deliberate and unauthorized access by a third party. Now, it's about four pages, this PDF, and there's a bit of a data breach Q&A, how did it occur, we've investigated the breach and identified a vulnerability in the code that runs behind the app. Okay, fair enough. How did the City of York Council become aware of the breach? A third party who we believe was behind the deliberate unauthorized access shared a small redacted sample information they had extracted. Their email stated they provided this information to make us aware of the issue and enable us to address it. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the sense that you get in reading this, the implicit message which is being sent, is that someone managed to find a vulnerability in the application, they managed to extract some personal information, and then they sent it to the council. But if we go back to this previous image here, the bit here about we have notified the police of this deliberate and unauthorized access by a third party, the way that made me feel when I read it is that they were going to throw this poor person under the bus who had reported this incident. And I put out a tweet. I said, this breach notice from City of York doesn't feel good. Are they saying they built a product with a vulnerability in it, someone reported it and then reported it to them privately, and now they've called the cops? Geez, I hope not. And that had hundreds of likes and retweets and a lot of engagement there. And this was one of these ones where like 99% of the feedback was, this sucks. I really hope this is not the case, York Council, City of York Council. And then there was this small fraction of people who popped up and, well, they did illegally access the data. They should be reported to the police and there should be process. And now things have played out very differently, but I want to go through this chronologically. So at the point where people are saying, well, this person did access personal data, they need to be reported to the police. At this time, we didn't know what had happened. We do now, and we're going to talk about this. We didn't know what had happened. However, regardless, let's imagine that they had tampered with a parameter. They added one to a number in a URL, and they had seen someone else's data. I posit that that is not something which warrants calling the police and making a public statement about calling the police. And the reason why is that, and this is a big theme that came through, it worries me enormously when the message that someone sees is that if I find a vulnerability and I report the incident, I face the potential of legal action. I face the potential of the police turning up and taking my electronic toys away. This is not something that we want to encourage, this feeling, this reaction of the council and then the feeling that people have when they see this. And many, many people said, look, this is exactly the sort of thing that stops me from wanting to report. And this is probably, like, regardless of whether they should have called the cops or shouldn't have called the cops or any of this sort of stuff, it is a data breach. It is probably something that they had to report to their local regulator, being the ICO in the UK. And that's fine. But there's a difference between, hey, let's contact the regulator and let them know that there was an exposure versus let us call the police and actually say that this person over here accessed our data. So the way it read worried me enormously and worried many people enormously. I did have a bit of engagement with a few people that disagreed with it. I understand why, or disagreed with them, the masses. I understand why they did, because they think it becomes a legal thing. But again, I worry about the message it sends. Now, I tweeted that out, got a lot of engagement, and then I went to bed. When I got up, I had some more interesting information. I did get contacted by the company that was involved. In fact, the company whose developer was involved. And as we now know, this company is called RapidSpike. Now, I want to make sure I do these guys justice because they've really done a good job here. So RapidSpike, create, monitor, and measure availability, performance, security, SEO, and assurance, all from one dashboard. They've got 1,300 followers, so I imagine they're a smallish organization based in Leeds in the UK, joined Twitter January 2011, so been around for a while as well. And they explained what had actually happened. Now, I'm going to go through the tweet thread that I put out after this because they explained what had actually happened. They sent a draft of the blog post. I know they were chatting with Scott Helm as well. Scott was in the press quite a bit over this as well, being from that part of the world. And we had a bit of discussion about the way they should frame their messaging, because it was their developer. They felt that this person had been unfairly vindicated, if you like. So their message came out, their blog post came out, and I want to share with you the tweet thread, which I very, very carefully prepared the night before I actually saw it, knowing what was coming, because I wanted to make sure I hit on the real points here. And I've said, the details of the City of York data breach are now clear, and wow, this has to be aired because the handling of it was shockingly bad. Start by reading the RapidSpike response. I'm going to put a link to that in my references. Let's be crystal clear about what happened. Every single person that used City of York's app in the way it was designed to be used was sent the personal information of other people. They just didn't see it on the screen as it was returned by an API and not displayed in the UI. So what these guys were doing was the API, which was called when you first opened the app and used it in the way it was intended to be used, returned the personal information that got this guy into trouble. So for all the people like a day before that were saying, well, he did actually access other people's personal information, the cops really need to have a chat to him. All he did was look at his network traffic and he saw exactly the same data the council had sent to everyone else. And I find this kind of hilarious because as I discussed with a couple of people, I said, look, let's be clear. There are cases where you might see someone else's personal data as a security researcher, which is not necessarily due to you probing a system in an unethical way. So, for example, we have seen cache poisoning before where someone's personal data has been returned to someone else. We saw this happen with Steam Network at Christmas a couple of years ago. We have certainly seen cases where someone has honestly, legitimately mistyped a URL. You typed it in, you got a number wrong, hey, you got someone else's record. And the point I was trying to make before what actually happened came out is that there are circumstances where you can legitimately see this, and I don't think that means that you need to get a visit from the cops. This was even worse than what I had expected, and I've seen a lot of weird shit. Like this was so bad, where literally everyone's data was, well, a subset of people, their data was sent just simply by loading the app. And all this guy's done is said, hey, City of York, every time someone loads your app, you're sending them other people's data. And they've gone, oh, we better call the cops. Like, what is up with that? That is just egregiously stupid. Now, there are nuances in here, as there always are, where it looks like the guy has reported it to City of York. They've replied to him. He has then sent them more information like 18 minutes later. One of the things that's come out in about the last 24 hours before recording is that York City Council says, well, we never got his reply, and that's why we called the cops. And we're like, so you got the first message where he said your things are exposed, but then you didn't get the second message. And one of the reasons I just saw is they said, oh, your SPF, your sender policy framework was incorrect and our security thing blocked it, but not on the first message, on the second. And by the way, that the dog might have eaten the email as well. Like, that is just a bullshit excuse. Anyway, we'll go on. So in this tweet thread, This is my tweet again. The, quote, deliberate and unauthorized access that City of York then referred to amounted to nothing more than a developer looking at the HTTP response whilst using their app. That is all. That's what resulted in them calling the cops on him. Now, in my when I do these workshops, I do these Hack Yourself First workshops, one of the modules that we do is around mobile APIs, where we take a phone, we proxy it through Fiddler on the PC or Charles on the Mac, and you look at the traffic that's going between your phone and the service. And one of the things I always say to people is it's really curious to look at the way people construct mobile apps, because in one way, they're just communicating over the web with HTTP. It's just curly braces instead of angle brackets. But in other ways, there's some fundamentally different paradigms. So for example, if I was to go to my bank in my browser and go to their website and their certificate was invalid, I would see a very big warning. I have had an instance in the past where that very same bank, a bank I use in Australia, who I won't name, turned off certificate validation in their mobile app. And the only way they found out about it is because I discovered it and I reported it privately and it never became a press thing. But the point here is that you can't disable certificate validation in a browser. You can in a mobile app. You shouldn't, but you can. You can get away with stuff. Another good example is if you're in a browser and you're a tester and you see a URL and you go, oh, it's got a number in the URL, I might add one. Very easy to do. Much harder to do when it's behind a mobile app. And for that matter, getting back to certificates, if you're not sure if your browser is using HTTPS or your bank is using HTTPS, you look at the address bar and you go, oh, they're using HTTPS. How do you know they are on a mobile app? You don't. So the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of things get hidden behind a mobile app, but you've just got to scratch the surface just a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit before you can see what is actually behind that veneer. And this inevitably is what the guy did. Moving on. Now, I said that, you know, they called the cops on him. And then I said, actually, that's not all, because after he noticed the personal data being returned, he did the right thing. The thing that I hope any of us would do, and contacted City of York privately to advise them they were leaking personal info. And again, one of the really important narratives, even before what actually happened came out, is that this is what you, me, the City of York, even if they won't admit it, wants people to do. If you find a vulnerability, we want to report it privately. And there is lots of discussion about where the line is and how grey it is. But this bloke's action were nowhere at all near the grey bit. They're than the whitest of white bits of ethical behaviour. So we really do not want to do things that discourage people from acting responsibly. Keep in mind that City of York went so far as to say this, quote, constitutes illegal access, end quote, which formed the basis for them notifying the cops. The entire tone of their disclosure blames the reporter rather than acknowledging that, quite simply, they fucked up. And this is exactly what happened. They made an absolute mess of what they were returning in their API. Now, I have seen this before. And in fact, after I put this thread out, I shared an anecdote that I'm going to share again here because a lot of people loved it. Now, here's the anecdote. When I was in my architecture role in Pfizer, everything that we did in Asia Pacific got outsourced. And they outsourced the development of a mobile app to a cheap dev shop in China. I mean, like, what could go wrong? You know, just get cheap developers and then add like language and cultural barriers as well. Anywho, this mobile app's developed. They sent it back. I'm testing on my iPhone. I've routed it through Fiddler. I'm looking at the traffic. Couple of clicks later, I've got everyone's data because it's being returned in an API. I get back to the developer and I say, hey, mate, I just proxied your app through, I said it a little bit differently because hey, mate, doesn't always translate well to people who have a language barrier as it is. I said, I just proxied your app through Fiddler and I saw everyone's data. And he said, that's okay. Our users don't use Fiddler. This is a true story. I kid you not. This is exactly what happened. And this is the sort of thing that happens behind the veneer of mobile apps. So, moving on. Then there's the ghoul of City of York saying they're not certain where the breached data is because they don't know what, quote again, the third party responsible has done with it. The council literally sent it to everyone that used the app. And it's, can you see the way they're framed? Now, keep in mind, that at the time of writing this, the council, or certainly some people within the council, knew exactly what had happened. They knew that their API had additional attributes on it, which inevitably weren't used by the app anyway, I assume. But, you know, because reasons, or because they were just taking the entire model from the underlying data structure and pumping it back through in the JSON response, they knew that they had been sending all of the data to every single person. Yet somehow they decided to write this message which says they don't know what the third party responsible has done with it. I just, these people on drugs, like how can you get to that conclusion? Moving on. They also either outright lied or were incapable of simply checking their mail when the tweet below was issued. The developer who found this incident replied in a mere 18 minutes after City of York emailed them. And the tweet below, we'll see if it's still in there. I was wondering if they would actually delete it, which they haven't. And the reason I was wondering if they'd actually delete it is that this seems like one of these cases where at some point you'll get to the point where they go, okay, look, we've just got to come clean and just go, yeah, yeah, we're like, we really stuffed up. But these guys are not backing down. Like they're not, they just don't seem to be reaching this point where they're like, okay, we've really, really screwed this up and we've got to eat a bit of humble pie. So anyway, their email is still there, and or rather their tweet. And this tweet says, despite attempts to contact them, they did not, them being the people that reported it, being the guy from the company, they did not respond, and as a result of what appears to be a deliberate and unauthorized access, again with these words, we informed the police. Anyway, moving on. I want this to get airtime because City of York's reaction scared the hell out of people who would otherwise normally do the right thing and report something like this. I noticed that I shared the notice below yesterday and it elicited a heap of worried responses. And then that links through to my original tweet. And for those who, in response to that thread, insisted that police action would be warranted, I hope your views have now adjusted accordingly. That seems fair. I mean, I take it that you wouldn't want to knock at the door by the cops yourself simply because you'd open the City of York app, which effectively would then put them in the same boat as the other guy insofar as they have accessed the same data because they've opened the app. Only difference is he was responsible enough to stand up and report it. Last bit, last tweet. Finally, one clear winner from this incident. Finally, one clear winner emerged from this incident very early. NYPD IIU, which is North Yorkshire Police Digital Investigation and Intelligence Unit. That is a good thing to abbreviate. You guys rock for this response, and it's earned a heap of respect from the very people we all want to report vulns like this. A big thank you from all of us. Now, here is their tweet because it does rock. They tweeted at myself and Scott Helm, and they said, Troy Hunt, Scott Helm, we are aware of the York, quote, data breach. I like the quotes, guys. Nice touch. But please be reassured we don't regard this incident as criminal. We recognize the benefits of software vuln disclosure. They even said vuln, isn't it nice? It's like they're our people. Vuln disclosure as part of a healthy security environment, and the researcher has acted correctly. And it just feels like a massive backhand to York City Council, you know? It's just like the cops have literally said, you guys have done the right thing. We value you doing this. Thank you very much. And this has had a lot of love, 742 likes at the time of recording. And it's just interesting to see how much that flipped the narrative, because on the one hand, we had council, which is seen rightly or wrongly as an authority figure, saying someone has access data, they shouldn't, we're calling the cops, we're going all serious. And all of us like, oh, come on, not this crap again. And then these guys have come along and said, no, you've done the right thing, this is great, we encourage it. And it has just restored confidence. And it's so, like, even the facts of the incident aside, what actually happened, what they did, where they shouldn't, whether they should, just looking at the reactions and the sentiment that these two different tweet streams created in the community, the council versus the cops. And look, I just really hope that their response is a bit of a reminder to people that there are some really, really awesome people out there in law enforcement, in the cyberspace, doing very, very cool stuff. And I hope that this incident now starts to, I guess, give people a little more confidence to do the right thing. So wrapping up on this, I would really like to see the City of York Council come forward and just eat that humble pie and say, look, we really screwed this up. And I think it's important because we want to make sure that people are reassured that they can report this sort of thing. I don't know if it's just a bit of face saving, which is just frankly digging them in even deeper that they don't do it. They don't seem to be really standing up and acknowledging how badly they screwed this up. There seem to be some very caveated apologies, but look, we're not really seeing what we'd really like to see. So hopefully those guys step up and do the right thing. But hey, even if they don't, at least the cops are on the side of the people being responsible and reporting it. Moving on, last thing. Next week is Have I Been Pwned's birthday, fifth birthday. And I was sort of thinking about what should I do. And I tweeted the other day, I said, what should I do? And people were like, send an email to everyone that's been pwned and say happy birthday. No, I'm not going to send 5.6 billion emails. That won't be happening. Send stickers. I would actually like to get some stickers made. If anyone knows where to get cool stickers made, please let me know and I will go and actually get this stuff done. There's those two things. I'm thinking of maybe doing like a live stream AMA sort of thing. And if I'm honest, part of that is because I don't know all the things that you guys want to ask. And part of it as well is that just seems like the least amount of work to do in advance of the event, given what I've just said about having too many commitments. So that would be next week. If you have thoughts on what you'd like me to do, let me know. But at the moment, I'm erring towards that AMA, and I'll make sure I get that organized a few days in advance and at a time where people from the other side of the world can join, and hopefully I can still drink beer. Now, last thing. DigiCert is sponsoring my blog this week, and they are talking about security and IoT. Anyone with an internet connection can compromise unsecured IoT systems. We did see the whole Mirai thing not so long ago. And people did also say to me, once I plug my washing machine into the internet, I do run the risk of becoming part of the botnet. Hopefully not. See how PKI can help solve IoT security challenges. So big thanks to those guys for sponsoring my blog this week. And of course, that IoT thing is a very, very interesting space. So that is it for this week. I will do my last one from Australia next week before I head off to somewhere a little bit cooler. Thank you very much for watching. I hope this has been interesting, particularly in terms of that York City Council stuff. And as always, I do appreciate the comments and the feedback on the blog. So thank you very much, guys, and I will come to you next week.